Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. You can turn out in person at the Catskill Town Hall to speak at these meetings or tune in to a live web stream through the Catskill Town Board and WGX.
Hey, this is David Poe, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra.
Columbia County-based jazz drummer Bobby Previtt plays with Ray Anderson, and Boar, which is Maeve Charlotte and Zoots Houston, also perform on Friday, January 20th at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill. WGXC will have a webcast of the entire show and will broadcast the show from 8 to 10 p.m. on 90.7 FM. Previtt is a Columbia County-based drummer and composer who has heard international praise, and Anderson has transferred Dick Griffin's multiphonic technique on the trombone to his own singing voice, enabling him to simultaneously blend several pitches to the point where he sounds like a blues-inflected Tuvan throat singer. Maeve Charlotte and Zoots Houston also perform on the show at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill on Friday, January 20th. Turn out to the Avalon Lounge or tune in a WGXC web stream and broadcast at wgxc.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Sun Common, supporting vibrant communities across New York for over 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Marcus DeGrazia Acupuncture of Austerlitz, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Something if I want you to mention something on air, should I just send that to you via chat?
Welcome to Race Talks on WGXC 90.7 FM. Today is January 17th, 2023. And we are here on air creating a community of talkers who are engaged in issues on the very relevant topics of race and ethnicity to better improve the lives of all people, but especially those who have been historically disenfranchised by the insidious isms, racism, sexism, colorism, and been kept a step or two or three behind others in the United States and abroad, with rampant and systemic discrimination. We talk about it here so you can be about it, so you can be about doing something actively engaged in your community, whether you be of color or in the majority. We all must work together doing our part. And as I say, I'm here, Kimberly Y. Irwin, and I'm here. One of the reasons is because I wanted to make sure our youth are being prepared to go forward, much like one would say Martin Luther King Jr. Certainly anyone who is alive today and can remember any of his speeches and see the awesome impact he's had on the lives of Americans and of course many in the world beyond these this great nation of ours. So he would sit down with youth and talk about how the world could be for people of color. And I actually was taken, had taken some of what he said to heart in writing a book, a children's book, Ending Racism, which made me realize that I too am part of the dream. And so that's what I would like to speak to today. One of our major topics today in January, of course, is Martin Luther King Jr. having his day, recognizing him and celebrating his legacy. And so I would like to do that. And I want to just add the fact that I'm one who sits at the founders table of ADD, Africa's Daughters of the Diaspora, so that in and around this area, we like to celebrate all people of color who are making a difference in the lives of others, and to enable people's voices to be heard, because without our voice, then we can't actually make anything happen. So I want to give a shout out to one of WGXC's finest. She actually has two, maybe even three, and radio shows on air, and that is Reverend Kim Singletary, who just yesterday on Martin Luther King Jr.'s Day brought together youth and clergy, much in, like I say, in the in celebration of Martin Luther King and his vision and commitment to our youth. So she brought together a table of leaders in the community, and I want to give a shout out to her, not only because she's doing quite wonderful things for our youth and for our community, but also because she is part of WGXC 90.7 FM radio shows, talk, and programmers. And so we want to give a shout out to WGXC for bringing on programs like mine and like hers that really allows us to have this community conversation. And I'd like to say we're going to have a great conversation because I have a guest who I haven't really talked to one-on-one. So this is going to be a very new and real conversation. Like we always keep our conversations real on Race Talks. We've said that before, but I've kind of change the dialogue in the intro because this is a really special time for us to really talk our minds within our heart and in our spirit. And this guest talker, she has so much of a background that it's great to bring her on so we can talk about many things. We can talk about art, music, entrepreneurship, people in the media. So before any further ado, let me get into telling you who she is, who's going to help with the theme race. A Binding Illusion. I have Joanne Lewis Paul, who comes to us by way of Nyack, New York, and is a writer, musician, community builder, and entrepreneur. Ms. Lewis Paul brings to the table a formal and informal educational background in communications and media, which informs her efforts to shift the paradigms of work and success in America. She believes media literacy is an important part of changing the often abusive work system, which is deeply tied to racism. Joanne, through various endeavors, seeks to mend the tears in the fabric of societal issues that negatively and disproportionately affect people of color, particularly when it comes to business ownership. Our theme, like I said, and talk topic is Race, a Binding Illusion. And we're going to chat with Ms. Lewis Paul. May I call you Joanne?
Absolutely, preferred.
Okay, so I'm going to call her Joanne from now on. And we're going to talk about how the delusion we have about race and how it connects us to our past that is decrepit, that of slavery, Jim Crowism, and the need for us in two centuries of more of having civil rights movements. And talk about MLK Jr.'s dream of having a one race, the human race ideal, which is real, to spread and make sure we live that in our own for our own humanity. And before I actually have her come on and say some words, I want to say one shout out again to others who in our community on WGXC, which is a nonprofit radio station. And we are always in acceptance of generous gifts of donations from viewers and listeners like you. So please watch other people's shows who, of course, share the same kind of understanding that we have on this show, that we have to not just talk about it, but be about it, and that we talk first so that we can do and be actively engaged after. So I want to thank all of those on other shows who share this show with their audience. So we have quite a few listeners today, the day after MLK Jr. Joanne, can you share with our listeners a little bit more in depth about what brings you to Race Talks and a little bit more than what I've mentioned about your past that you would like to share with your, with our listeners?
Sure. Thank you, Kimberly, so much for having me. Excited to talk to you this evening about the super important topic. So our paths crossed through a past endeavor of mine. I used to be a community manager for a business incubator based in Columbia County, New York, you know, up at the top of, just right outside of the Hudson Valley. And you and I met because I wanted you to present in our community about your expertise and your background around diversity and equity and inclusion and all that good stuff in the workplace. And through meeting you just through that space, I learned about your show here. And it really just stood out to me for obvious reasons. You know, my parents are, you know, immigrants from Haiti. So I'm a first generation Haitian American. I think that we all had our, you know, eyes, you know, really open to the impact of racism in 2020 after the, you know, public murder of George Floyd. And between that and just all the extra time on all of our hands to think during COVID, especially during that first year, I started to, just think about it more and more. So when I learned that you had this program, I definitely wanted to come and just share whatever I could and powwow with you. So my background, like you mentioned, so I have a degree in communications and media arts, as well as a degree in business management. And I started a degree at CUNY Hunter College. It started off as a psychology degree, but I took a bunch of sociology courses and realized that I really, really love sociology a lot more than I ever thought I did. So that degree is in progress as well. The sociology courses that I did take in Hunter, a couple of them circulated around crime. So I took like a social control and deviance course, and I took a criminology course, and I just learned a lot of things. And of course, you know, I knew that Black people were overrepresented in news media when it came to crime and all of that, but I just learned a lot. I'm kind of, I guess, like a ongoing student of life. I just enjoy deep diving into things that I'm interested in. I've always been interested in the humanities. Through my media studies, I learned a lot about the history of the news media, how it came to be and why it is what it is now and what it is now. In this last year and a half, a little more than a year and a half, I've been working for myself. So I took that dive into entrepreneurship in April 2021. So it's been actually almost 2 years. And it's been a very interesting journey. Kimberly's like nodding her head. It's been a very interesting journey. And I think maybe Kimberly, you and any other entrepreneurs that may be listening can attest to the fact that there's a lot of highs and lows, but I don't think I can trade it in for anything else. I'm in too deep, and I love the freedom and the ability to do these kinds of things and take on different projects and bring them into fruition and the freedom and all that good stuff. I don't know what else I can share about my background. Other than that, but yes, I'm a musician. I play bass. I am a community builder. I have a Facebook group for Hudson Valley-based entrepreneurs. It's called Hudson Valley United Freelancers and Entrepreneurs. And that's been a really great experience running. That is just over 2 years old. Actually, the 12th was our birthday. So that's continuing to grow, and a lot of great things are happening there. And I love it. And I'm just enjoying the ride.
Wow, when you were talking, I was nodding my head, of course. But I was also thinking of the wealth of information you have that you can impart on the show today, because just with your history, with your parents being from another country, and then your growth and your towards from working in one area to then moving into another area. I think right now we're not inclined to be in one position all of our lives. That's something that may have been a generation or two ago, where you had a job and you were supposed to get a good job, right? And then you stay in that job all your life. And in fact, having anything like a music career, being a musician, was a bit frowned upon. Because it didn't seem like you'd be able to pay your way. And now I think maybe due to technology, we are often able now to branch out and do many things somewhat simultaneously.
Yeah.
What are your parents thinking about what you do? Because I know historically, I know when I was in school, and you could tell me a little bit about this, if this is the case with you, we weren't really seemed to be someone who would work in arts, the field of arts and music. Mm-hmm. That would be frowned upon. Where's your money coming? You know, we want you to go out and, you know, pay a bill.
Right.
How was that in relation to your parents, being that they were first generation Americans? Is that what I understood? I heard.
Or? So they're Haitian immigrants.
Okay.
So I'm first generation Haitian American.
You're first generation.
Yeah, and that's a very good question. And I'm really just thinking of my mother. And, you know, it's difficult. I mean, there's kind of like a running joke amongst all of the Haitian people that I know. And even like on the different like Haitian American humor, like Instagram accounts, for example, or it almost feels like all of our parents were just like indoctrinated into the same school in Haiti. And, you know, there's a lot of similarities. And so, like, for example, in Haitian culture, it's like there's only a couple of exceptional occupations, like nursing is a big one. You know, they're just kind of like, why don't you just be a nurse? And again, it's because of the security. You know, they don't ask if this is something you're passionate about, if you like science or, you know, the medical field. It's just be a nurse, you know. And even though that is a great job, you know, it doesn't come without its struggles. But it's been interesting having to explain to my mother what it is that I do. I kind of just distill it into I am an entrepreneur and a musician, and I work for myself and I do different things. But I feel like it's big in her generation, with lots of people from other countries, not just Haiti, because one of my best friends is South Indian, and she deals with the same thing. And her parents are still disapproving, even though she, like, you know, is a professor at a university. And,
oh, wow. And all
of that. Yeah, it's kind of
it wasn't the right field, right?
It's because she was doing it part time. You know, wow. She was like splitting her work between research work for Big Pharma and then doing part time. She was teaching like one introductory course at Hofstra University, and that wasn't good enough for them, which is strange. But I think a lot of it has to do with wanting to be able to be proud of, you know, when you talk about your kids to your friends. You know, what are you telling them? I think that a lot of immigrant parents, especially of that generation, you know, they look to their children as kind of like a jewel in their crown, because a lot of them came to America to provide a better life for their kids. And so I think that there is a big reflection, or at least they believe there's a big reflection on them, you know, based off of how their kids turned out. You know, because it's a big, you know, my parents came to America to work and to have a family and to provide a better life than they could in Haiti. And so if your kid isn't doing something great, then it's like you failed as a parent, kind of a thing. So it is a bit of a tension point. But I try to just, she actually joined Facebook like a year or so ago, and I was actually a little worried about it when she friended me. But actually, you know, speaking about technology, it's helped because now she can see what I'm doing, and she can see some of, you know, she can see me interacting with my friends, and she can see the things that I'm posting about, and she can see what I'm passionate about. And she's very engaging in a positive way, which I was like, "Ooh, thank God." you know, so it's actually Facebook has made her understand me and what I do and what I love more, which is great. And then my father, when he was alive, I don't know, he seemed encouraging. You know, he didn't ask me a whole lot about what I did. You know, it's like when we spent time together, we were really just kind of hanging out. Again, I think it's a generational thing and it's a cultural thing. You know, and he didn't grow up with his parents asking him about like his day and his passion and his dreams and things like that. But when I did share with him things that I was excited about, whether it was an upcoming gig or, you know, something else work related, he was always very encouraging. And you know, he came across my YouTube channel. I had started a vlog, you know, years ago. And I sang on one of them, and he was like, "I just listened to it. You're doing a great job," you know. So he was always encouraging. But yeah, it's very interesting. It's very interesting.
Yeah. What you were sharing with the parents and their view, and with your friends' parents and similar views, I think that's one of what we can consider an illusion, a binding illusion, how because a person can be identified as an African American or a Black person, that their history is all the same, mm-hmm. right? We can be of different ethnic makeups and have different ethnic realities and then somewhat similar to those who really don't have the same color or skin color, skin tone as we do, and that could be more similar. So you can have two people be more alike who actually have different ethnic backgrounds and tradition and heritages, right? So I think that's one of the things that is the illusion with race, is that there's sometimes, you know, a person sees a person and sees their color, and that to them is their entire history.
Right.
Where that color is can have a history that's, well, and does have a history that is the multitude of experiences that can be made up of, you know, different cultures, nations, experiences, desires, and wants for your children. I can tell you, my mother, she grew up in Hudson, but my grandparents were from North Carolina, the South. So they are what I term in my new upcoming book, without a firm title right now, so I won't plug it. But I call it traditional African Americans, where it's the story of the African American slave being enslaved, coming from the Great Migration from the South to the North in droves to look for jobs, especially in the new economy, which was the industrial age. And like you mentioned, right now with the technology age and the age of information, the informational age, our parents, just one generation, they're having to make that leap to understanding us. And I'm around young people, and there's another leap to be able to understand and engage them. And they're having a whole different experience within racial identity than even we are. And isn't that what Martin Luther King Jr. actually wanted when he had that dream, was for us all to be able to secure our own future, our own path based on who we are, our identity and our characters, as opposed to what we look like and our supposed understanding of our background was supposed to be?
Right. Yeah, I think you're totally right. And that what you're talking about that assumption that people make when they see your skin color is, and maybe it's obvious, maybe it doesn't need to be stated, but it is unique to people of color. I mean, through and through, you know, white people are allowed to just be people. You know, they're allowed to be taken by their own merit. You don't look at a white person and make like a whole bunch of assumptions. I mean, we're all subject to prejudices, you know, because it's so imbued in us. It's so in our environment and in the tapestry of our just our reality. You know, but even when some things mentioned in the news, you know, for example, about, let's say, a white person doing a mass shooting, it's about that individual and their background and what went wrong with them and what was their family life. Whereas, you know, Black people and in violent crime is overrepresented just on your daily news. And so it fuses that assumption of, oh, this is a brown person. This is a very dark brown person. You know, this is someone who's dangerous, or this person might be poor, is probably poor, or doesn't speak English very well. I mean, you know, to kind of tie in what you were saying about being able to forge our own futures and the younger generations in education, something that I'm very grateful that my parents did and that they worked hard for was to provide a really good education for me and my brother. I don't think they even realized to what extent, how important and impactful that would be, because people are still very surprised when I sound like this, you know, after seeing me first. You know,
and grow- there, when you said sound like this, is it your tone or that you speak grammatical English standard? What was considered Midwestern standard?
Well, you know, it's interesting. So so I studied linguistics in school as well. I have a minor in that, and it's specifically social linguistics. And and so the term within that field would be standard white English, right? So that's what we're taught in school, is standard white English, which I thought was really interesting, because it's like growing up, it's always, I heard a lot, oh, you sound like a white girl, you sound like a white girl, you sound like a white girl. And I used to
write that, but I'm going to say that, but
But that's, you know, so it's like to be proficient in standard white English, it's like, you know, I went to a private school, like a private Catholic school, for the first 5 years of my education. And there were like five different language books alone, you know? So when I switched over to public school, I was already ahead of a lot of my peers because of that education. And, you know, I will forever be indebted to my parents for really driving home the importance of doing well in school. You know, my brother and I did very well in school. And a lot of times now that I'm older, I realize that that's kind of been my saving grace in this country, because I don't, you know, I, like, for example, I've never had a problem on a job interview, you know, and that's a couple of things, but a lot of it has to do with my communication skills and the fact that I sound like a lot of the people who are interviewing me. And so to a certain level, they're comfortable around me, and the way I speak conveys certain assumptions about whatever intelligence, capability, and all those things, which really is more about the fact that it's really about more about the tie of that, of the whiteness, that tie to whiteness. Like if you speak standard white English, then you're intelligent and you're competent and you're capable. You sound like us, you know, we think you can do the job, you know, whereas opposed if I spoke Black English, which is a completely valid language, you know, even if I had the same schooling, if my accent was a little different, you know what I mean? I don't think I'd be as successful at job interviews and at work, you know, in general, those kinds of things. So it's like, yeah, you know, Dr. King Jr., his vision is coming true, little by little, especially since, I think, because of what happened with George Floyd and all of the other, just the explosion of awareness of like police brutality against Black people in 2020, more and more people are realizing that all different types of ways of being are valid. So not just standard white English, but yes, but you can be an intelligent person and speak Black English. You can be a good, great job candidate and have a Black American name, you know, it's, you know, it's
or
like
dreadlock.
Exactly. Black hairstyles are becoming more acceptable in the workplace and became like a federal court issue, right? A constitutional
issue. Right. In
school,
they were saying that certain kids' hairstyles weren't allowed into the school system. Mm. And they had a rule about hair type. So, yeah. So the more the media talks about it and maybe because of social media, we can, you know, share it that much quicker. We're not waiting for ABC, CBS, or NBC to give us the 3 minutes of airtime.
Thank God. And that's like one of, you know, for all of the, let's say, negative things that come with social media, there are a lot of positive things. So now social media is part of the media, and more people are getting their information and their news from the media. And again, that's good and bad, because like you said, we're in the information age, or, you know, one could say the misinformation age. There's so much information that it becomes more difficult to discern what is true. And we have to, now there's more onus on us to fact check, which I started doing again through the pandemic, because it's so easy to get sucked up into like the vortex of something happening, you know. And it's like the way it's always been in the media is that the shelf life of news is very short, which can be good and bad depending on what you're talking about. But social media can either perpetuate something and amplify it and multiply it in a very toxic way, or a positive way, and oftentimes both at the same time, you know. But all the different arguments that people get into over social media, you know, I have to admit that I'd gotten sucked into those too, but I learned how to not, you know, I learned how to stop and do a quick Google search before I make a comment. I learned to like, I had to be humbled, you know, into learning and checking myself first, checking my assumptions first before I go and I make a comment or I make a post or I reply to somebody, because it just gets amplified so quickly, you know, it gets multiplied so quickly.
And I know years ago when I started using Facebook more, I would post things that were untrue. And after the third time, someone saying, hey, this isn't true, because I learned to do exactly that thing. Because when do you learn that? Usually when you make a mistake. Although now they're actually teaching young people in school where, you know, how to discern good media information versus the fly by night, throw it up there and run kind of media that's, you know, that's not true. You know, since we're talking about MLK Jr. Coming a day after we celebrate his legacy, he was very cognizant of the media, right? He made sure that people were doing things in front of the camera, because that was what was going to make things change. When people in the North saw how people in the South were being treated, because Northerners, they just didn't believe some of the things that happened. I know my mom, I mentioned that she was born in the North. Well, she went to visit family in the South, and she ended up sitting in the front of the bus. And she was like, she got lots of love, but and she absolutely knew the idea that, you know, Black people had to sit in the back, but she never had to deal with that, so she didn't really do that. You know, she thought of it as an idea, not as the reality of things. Yeah. But she said she got a lot of looks, but she was allowed to stay in the front. She said, because the bus driver would tell the white people getting on that she was young, right? But that she was from the North. And it was almost like, okay, they didn't want to make a stink, because being from the North, someone might say something about it, and now it's a big deal. And the Southerners really knew they weren't doing right, because they didn't want it televised. It's like with Malcolm X, Malcolm X says the revolution will not be televised.
Yeah.
Well, we are having the revolution because of it being televised, or at least being, you know, zoomed into with our cell phones, right? So, like you mentioned, the the summer of new marches because of what happened to George Floyd. Mm-hmm. And it's just, and I just want to also remember that Amadou Diallo, mm-hmm. he, like King, was, I would consider it assassination. I know the terms mean things and, you know, you can get killed and murdered, but assassinated because I think it was just because he was Black. He was just a certain color. He was on his own doorfront. So yeah. What makes you guilty of that?
Right.
You know, so I think we can look at these people who were slain in such a way as people who have allowed for the movement to continue and to bring those of us who didn't believe that we were part of anything, part of a movement. Like I mentioned, my mom, it wasn't real for her until she was in the mix and she started experiencing it, but she still could never experience it the way the people from the South with darker skin tones experience it, right? Because she could always go home. Home is North, right? Out of that lifestyle. Although New Yorkers are now recognizing that New York itself, our state here, had a slave history. Mm-hmm. And of course, a history of discrimination. I know that I tried for the life of me when I got out of grad school. I had to study social linguistics. It was my favorite, I have to say.
Yeah.
But in order to get my degree in intercultural communication at Penn, I definitely had to, UPenn, I should say it correctly. I had to take some social linguistic courses. And it was that coming out of school and then moving out of grad school, moving to New York and Long Island, I literally couldn't find a place to live because people were racist. They did not want a Black young person living in their residences. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't the case that I would never have thought it. You know, mm-hmm. I applied. In fact, the realtors were white realtors. They were surprised. They didn't even know. They were like, oh, let's come bring you here. I mean, they thought, you know, if you like it, you get it. I liked it. I didn't get it. And they were trying to figure out ways of sharing that information with me and trying to deal with it themselves. So racism for white people have really come to the forefront too. And right. I think that matters in how we are perceived in the media. So you said your media yeah. background, and how do you, what do you look at anything in particular to inform you or to gather more information? Because I want my listeners to kind of have some steps to go through in order to find the right information instead of just, you know, fly by night.
Right. Yeah. So it's like, you know, I've never actually been like a big news person, but I really got into an HBO program called Last Week Tonight by John Oliver. And it's actually on YouTube. So the full episodes aren't like available on YouTube for free, but the deep dive portions of each episode are. And so every week he goes into, you know, he's this comedian who runs, it's kind of like a kind of format, like a late night with David Letterman, if I'm saying that title correctly. But it's that kind of a format, but except without guests and things. It's just him. And there's some comedy skits in the beginning, and then the bulk of the program is a deep dive into some issue in America. And a lot of episodes are based on political issues and media issues. And so I've learned so much just from watching that. Like he had an episode about news and how it's becoming more and more news stations are more and more being bought out by private companies. And so that completely skews the information and the content that's being put into them. I think one of the biggest things I learned when I first started studying the media in school was that advertising is what fuels the media. So these private businesses have a lot of power into something that's supposed to be unbiased and it's supposed to be resourceful and helpful. But when advertisers are putting lots and lots and lots of money and manpower into advertisements, they want to secure a good rate of return on their investment. So it becomes a business with a bottom line, and that bottom line is not, let's educate the public and make sure that they know what they need to know. So, but it's been like that for a long time. So I would say, so something like that, John, you know, and I will, you know, full disclosure, it's like, I don't belong to any particular political party. Last Week Tonight by John Oliver, you know, John Oliver is definitely a progressive liberal. And, but I think that he does a very good job of like checking his biases and being transparent about the fact that like, he does have a specific opinion, but also trying to give the information in a way where it's, but this is what it is, regardless of what I feel about this, regardless of my own political leanings, this is, these are the facts. So I would say that.
It would be HBO, so we should go to HBO.
So you can either go to HBO or YouTube. Yeah, do a YouTube.
No, I'm just saying, because you talked about advertisers, right? And HBO, really, that they don't have advertisers, so they're
right. It's a lot more freedom.
Right.
Exactly. So finding new sources that are independent, I think, would be a great place to start to look, because they have more freedom to just share what they want to share. But that was a big eye opener for me, is that like nothing on that you see on television is an accident. And there was a lot of money and a lot of thought put into everything you see. And there's an agenda being pushed all the time, which there's nothing wrong with an agenda in and of itself, but it's like starting, I would encourage people to be critical thinkers when they watch instead of being passive viewers. Like, who's right, funding this, et cetera.
And I do think that we are creatures of habit and comfort. So we're going to continuously watch things that make us feel good. And so we can kind of know what kind of people we are by what we like to engage with.
Right.
And so if you don't know something, it's possibly because you don't want to know. Mm-hmm. And so I would say to people, especially those of us who have children, find a percentage of your time in looking at what your children are looking into, because then you'll know more about who they are and how to speak to them. And that's another thing that Martin Luther King was able to do really well, I mentioned early, is to talk to our youth. And I know rap music is the music for youth, even to this day. I'm certainly not a youth anymore.
Same.
But it started in my youth. So I kind of like to know that I was burgeoning, you know, that was my kind of music growing up. So I wanted to play some music for our audience. And I decided to choose this particular, I don't know, sometimes I think I'm always choosing the same artist, but I'm not sure. But this is an artist that is Public Enemy, right? They were very political, but I chose this because of the name that they share, and just to say that, you know, say their name, right? Say their name, and that's one way of keeping their legacy and their hopes and then their dream alive with us and our children. So I know you are a big music, well, you're a musician, so you have to be a fan of music. And so on the other side, I'm going to ask you about what you think of it and what songs, if any, motivate you or that you enjoy or, you know, you would like to share. Okay? So you can be doing that. Thinking, as I hope, because, you know, sometimes I do my share screen stuff. It doesn't work, but we're going to try.
Yes.
Yeah, It's very slow coming up, but it's coming up slow. Let's see if it'll actually work. Okay, so this is Show 'em What You Got. You're gonna love it.
Freedom is a road seldom traveled by the multitude.
Public enemy number one.
Show what you got. Show what you got. Show what you got.
Public enemy number one.
The same guy that gave wisdom to Pakistan.
Public enemy.
Show what you got.
Public enemy.
Show what you got.
Public enemy number one.
The same guy that gave wisdom to Adam Creighton Powell.
Show what you got.
Public enemy.
Show what you got.
Public enemy number one.
Okay, so that was Public Enemy's Show 'em What You Got on their It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back. And I heard this quite a bit of times, and I never listened to the lyrics because it's so hard and to me to hear that they mentioned Martin Luther King, Malcolm X. They mentioned, I think, people in South Africa. There's just names. So many names in the movement history, history's movement.
Yeah.
Of course, yeah. Now I'm forgetting her name. She just said it. The one who the didn't sit in the back of the bus.
Rosa Parks. Yeah.
Rosa Parks. Thank you. Yeah. So all these things are mentioned, and it's like it went over my head, and mm-hmm. I wanted to play that. Plus, I like the idea that. They say, you know, Public Enemy, it's politics and music, and that you can intertwine them both and, you know, make music is part of a movement too. Right?
Yeah. 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 Music is a universal language, you know, and I think that music's so powerful. And I think you can't help but to have some kind of element of that with whatever movement is happening, you know? Public Enemy was, you know, one of, I think, the few. I mean, hip hop, once you got past like the Sugar Hill Gang days, it did become very political. It became a way for especially Black men to have a platform and a voice to speak. First of all, I love it. I love whatever sample that is with that sax. I love that. But I'd be curious to know whose speech that was, like who's speaking. If that was something that they recorded, if they sampled this from someone else's speech, or if they had somebody do it. But I feel like it's like almost like they sampled it.
Let me read you some. It said songwriters Cartland Weidenhauer, Eric Sadler, and James Henry. I have to make the text bigger. I can't. Boxley. Mm. And it says, oh, and some of the names, Marcus Garvey, Adam Clayton Powell. And we know he's big in New York. He has a whole city street named after him.
Yeah.
In Manhattan. Rosa Parks, Malcolm X, Nelson Mandela, Winnie Mandela. Stay strong, sister. They say, brothers and sisters, right? Please join with me to welcome and listen. And basically, he's saying the same God that gave wisdom to these people.
Yeah.
Same God.
Yeah. I love it. I mean, this definitely like hits home for me. You know, it's like, you know, I'm Christian, and Martin Luther King Jr. was Christian. And I know that that informed a lot of his belief. And I think that that's his faith is what he stood on and what gave him strength to continue, because he definitely, there were times where he got very weary during the fight and wanted to take a step back, or, you know, without looking like a coward or something, because it became very overwhelming. But I think that his belief that we are all one because we come from the same God, is the vision that he took hold of, that it wasn't just an idea. It wasn't just a theory, but that it's true, and it's true for a reason. And, it's interesting because, again, another positive thing that came from COVID, that I'm noticing is a lot more people interested in spirituality and a lot more people understanding that there's something bigger than ourselves. And so I think a lot more people are open to that and realizing that, like, really, I don't know, the preciousness of our humanity. I think a lot more people are aware of that, you know, and how hurtful it is to see social injustice. And, you know, how damaging and depressingly effective racism is. But I think more and more people are aware of that, and white people. I mean, in the last couple of years, I've had, you know, several of my white friends initiate conversations with me around race, which is very interesting, you know, and I am seeing a lot more representation of Black people and positive representation of Black people in the media, you know, whereas, like, in the past, if you had quote unquote too many Black people on the same show, then it becomes a Black show. You're seeing, you know, and you're seeing a lot more of just people of color in shows, and it's not marketed as like a Black show, you know. And that's great, and I hope it lasts. You know, the cynic in me is waiting it out, because I think that there's definitely a there's a bandwagon that, you know, major brands are on, because they realize that people are demanding certain things, or, you know, there's a lot of people who are going to like jump on a bandwagon of a movement and be like, hey, we Black Lives Matter, we care about Black people, you know, even though you never had them in your magazine up until George Floyd. Now all of a sudden your Instagram feed is like peppered with Black faces, you know, and it's, the hope is that that's a real change and not just a savvy business choice, but only time will tell.
I'm going to jump in because I want to put in the talk term, genuine equality, because what you're mentioning is exactly, is this genuine equality, or is it an advertisement for the dollar? Is it, you know, or does it matter? If you know, we got slavery because of the financial reasons, this huge country with a lot of land, they needed people to work it. They couldn't get enough from Europe, people who were already in prison systems. So they looked to the left, looked to the right, okay, Africa, bring them in. So, you know, we got here because of the need for wealth, right? And so I would say is the way to, and I'm using this term on purpose, the promised land going to be led to the promised land because of wealth. The need for wealth, well, you know, advertises wealth.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think it's a good question. I partially feel like in one way, it doesn't totally matter why, you know, why it's happening, as long as it's happening, because, you know, I didn't get any, you know, we didn't get, you know, like any representation or much representation of Black people in the media growing up. And now kids today are going to, a lot more kids today are going to see themselves represented in Disney movies and, you know, primetime television shows. And they're not just the token character, they're the hero, they're, you know, they're all those things. Right, exactly. They're not just the athlete. Right. And so on the one hand, it's like, it doesn't matter why these companies are motivated to put their dollars into this on that front. But I think that on the back end, I think it does matter, because real change isn't just that superficial. It's important. I don't mean superficial like it's unimportant. Representation is deeply important, but it's surface. It's just the tip of the iceberg. You know, real change, it has to affect all facets of life. You know, it has to affect government policy and paradigm shifts. And it's interesting when you brought up Malcolm X's quote about the revolution won't be televised. You know, I tend to agree with him in the sense that the real revolution isn't what we see in the media. It's what happens in each of us, you know, because that's what the real change is going to be. You know, it's, we have to think differently. We have to feel differently. Beautiful. You know, we want to, we have to believe differently. And that won't be, that won't really be televised. The things that get televised are the safe choices. Abolishing slavery, you know, to Abraham Lincoln's credit, was not a safe choice. That that had real sacrifice to it, real financial sacrifice. And I personally would love to see more major companies not doing the safe choice of putting, like, you know, a Black protagonist in their movie, because that's a safe choice right now, because it's kind of pandering. But I'd like to see more media companies and mega corporations making real sacrifices towards equality, that, and that real sacrifice is financial.
Well, I like seeing that too. And I think that's, we're going to run out of time, and I want to make sure you, the audience knows how to, you know, interact with you in the future. But I do think it's important. I like to add right acts, what people can do right now. Obviously you can vote. You can donate money to anything that has to do with getting people out of poverty, right? Martin Luther King Jr. was big, and that's what won't be televised, right? The idea that people are working their way out of poverty. There are people coming out of prisons. They need jobs. People need to help them with other aspects of their lives. Housing is still a big issue. Yeah. So voting, putting your money where your mouth is, and knowing, and let me be clear, raising your children. Mm-hmm. Get to know your kids, know what they're seeing, and be part of their future, because that matters. And I think you've heard it here specifically from our guest, Joanne. Her parents mattered. My mom, to me, mattered. This is how we are able to converse with you here and give you a lot about back about our lives. So share with us, Joanne, in the 2 minutes we have left, how can my listeners engage with you further?
Social media. I love social media. I am big on Facebook and Instagram. So if you are in the Hudson Valley region of New York and you're a freelancer, an entrepreneur, small business owner, you can find me on my Facebook group, Hudson Valley United Freelancers and Entrepreneurs. You can add me on my
own. Can I be a member of that group? Because I'm not in Hudson Valley.
You can, yeah, because it's okay, because you're right there. You're like, Hudson's right there. So
it's still Hudson. It's called Hudson.
Right, exactly, exactly. So it's, you can, absolutely. Catskillians welcomed. So that Facebook group, you can find me on my personal Facebook page, just my name, Joanne Louis Paul, JoanneLouis-Paul. And then Instagram, I'm at Joanne About Town. You can find me there, or you can email me at me@JoanneAboutTown. Just launched.
I love that movie.
Just launched a new bi-weekly newsletter for the Facebook group.